Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Startopia Radio.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Startopia Radio. And this is going to be a fun one because we're going to be talking about one of your favorite subjects, mobile apps.
I do like the opportunity to talk about mobile apps. There's a lot of neat stuff I want to do for the network, so maybe we'll learn something here. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Titania Jordan. She's CMO with KidsLink. And we're also going to talk with Matt Suber. He's co-founder with Split. But first up on Startopia Radio this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the CEO and founder, the Grand Poobah, the Big Moo Haw, with photo in Sly. And Sly, I'm going to let you have some practice pronouncing your last name.
Barishich.
Very nicely done.
Correct.
Good work. So what are you out there trying to do for folks, Sly?
We're trying to automate photo documentation for businesses, small and big, from the capture through filing, management, and make the whole thing fully configurable so that it can meet different business needs.
Do you feel like he's answered that question before?
It sounds like, did they, your pitch coaching, they tell you that?
Actually, just a whole lot of repetition.
So what was the kind of the catalyst for this, creating this app?
In my previous business life, I ran a real estate fund in Croatia. So I always wanted to have my own business. And through a bunch of conversations with my wife, who is also another of the co-founders, and my American brother, as we were discussing it, and I sort of expressed the problem statement of getting all these photos and a bunch of information separately from the photos, all the phone calls, the repeated visits, that it had to be a better way to solve for the business use of the photos from the field, including the reports and the data that comes with it.
So it was from a real estate perspective. So the realtor maybe went to a location, took a bunch of pictures.
So the real estate fund, but it was actually more from a development construction perspective. But then we also discovered or ascertained that basically the solution is applicable across any business that has a heavy field exposure. So mm-hmm. including the realtors, property management, insurance claims adjusting, merchandising, wide array of uses.
So now can you walk us through how it is actually used?
So basically what happens today, to sort of maybe start with that problem statement, that generally photos are captured separately from the information in the field. So what we have come up is a single tool that allows you to snap, tag, annotate photos, automatically capture the GPS date, timestamp, which device took the photo associated with the project, do a reverse address lookup. All the tags and annotations, you can actually tap on the photo and call out different pieces that you want to comment. We take all that data and embed it into the photo, and then have a direct software connectors to customers' own repositories, which is another difference, is that we don't store the photos for the businesses. We actually route them into the right location and the right folder in their existing repositories, serve the data for analysis, and then that relationship between the field and the office is fully configurable on our web management portal.
So now you're the person in the field, you take the picture. Do I have to have some special skill, or the app is really doing all the work?
That's the whole automated piece. It's supposed to be as easy as possible because there's a wide array of people doing it. So, you know, superintendents, property management,
right.
There's a different level of, call it tech savviness. So this is literally you just take the photo, you come up on the photo, and then you have the drawer where you can just click what you want to annotate.
So those are like boxes that are being checked?
If you want to tag, yes, but most of the data in terms of the key stuff that you want is actually automatically picked up from the device, and then based on your configuration, everything else happens automatically.
Right, so you don't have to be tech savvy at all, really.
That's absolutely right.
You're just using this app in the field.
Absolutely.
On your phone.
Yes, or a tablet, and then there's obviously always better ways to do it going forward, and the way we call that is zero friction, mm-hmm. is that literally the technology asks you, if you want to do something, and all you have to focus on is taking the photos and capturing the key information that your business needs.
So now, when your firm is in Croatia and America?
Yes. So we are headquartered in Atlanta, but the fully staffed development team is in Croatia. That's where I'm from. So when we started developing the solution, we were in Croatia, but focused on the U.S. market with my call it American exposure, being a student here, that you having done in the MBA at the University of Georgia and worked in U.S. as well.
So now, are there any challenges working in two countries?
Absolutely. Let's start just with the time difference. So,
what's the time difference?
6 hours. So those guys wake up earlier.
So it's their problem. It's not your problem.
In a way, but if they need me at the beginning of the day, it ends up being my problem. And then there's the whole, communication is extremely important when you're building the business.
Sure.
So, how to do that across the continents, different languages, etc. But the good thing is all the guys speak English. A lot of people in Croatia do. It's sort of mandatory in school. And then using technology to help build a technology company. So you have all the online conferencing, shared docs, collaboration, etc.
Now, can you share a little bit about Croatia's startup scene?
Absolutely. So I guess I would start by saying, Croatia is either equally or smaller than Atlanta. So it's a much smaller scene, if you will. But it is emerging, and I would actually call the Atlanta scene also emerging when you're comparing it to the Silicon Valley. So In that sense, it's very similar. A lot of smart and ambitious people trying to change the world and do something different. So in that sense, trying to follow the track. But the size of the market ends up being a big difference. There's more people here looking to support the startups than in Croatia, and it's much easier to get to the customers and talk about and refine the product and the solution rather than doing it in Croatia.
What about developers? Obviously, you have developers there. Is there a bunch of them? Or are you just
not unlimited supply. That's the good thing is that I am Croatian and that I know a lot of people there. However, at the same time, even though there is not unlimited supply, it is for the right story, it is easier to get them and to get the really talented ones. At the end of the day, we're not in Croatia, we're not in San Francisco, so you don't have Apple, Facebook, and Google basically fighting for the limited resources. Although they have been lately coming to Croatia and trying to pluck
some of the talent.
Exactly.
So what do you need most right now? Do you need funding, employees, customers, sleep? What do you need?
All of the above. And I would, if I had to order it, I would say customers always first. I mean, we have a lot of traction, but basically the more of customer validation you have, the easier it is to get the funding. The more funding you have, the easier it is to get even more talent on the business side in terms of executing the plan. And when you can do that, then you can get some sleep.
Now, do you have any mentors in the technology space?
Yes, and that's where I think we have been extremely blessed and fortunate. And I would love to call him out, Mr. Frank Bishop of Atlanta, Mike Parham, Dale Taysom, basically local angel investors that sort of do this on a regular basis, and they have supported us from the beginning and continue to advise and support us even from the funding perspective.
Now, can you share a little bit for the listener who is trying to attract that angel investor? What did you have to do? How many frogs did you have to kiss before you found the right match for yourself?
Actually not that many, because first you have to know, they call it the profile fit, so you have to know who can understand your story and who is going to see it. There's a lot about how you present yourself and how you present the idea, how much you have thought it through. Big thing is the work ethics, that you're ready for what's coming and understand what the whole startup idea or having a startup actually entails. And then I would say you have to demonstrate that you're willing to learn on a daily basis. So it's not the first day when we got the idea that we knew everything that's going to happen, and actually being ready to learn and to listen to a lot of advice versus act like we know it all.
Now, can you share a little bit about your customer discovery process? How did you go about meeting those first customers and introducing the idea to them?
First, again, you're looking for the fit. In our case, we did anticipate that there's a wide usage can be in many different verticals and use cases. Obviously, personal network. James Gates, my American brother that started a company with us, obviously knew a lot of people in Atlanta, and we had a lot of friends from University of Georgia, and you just sort of start with whoever comes to your mind first, and then you go to the next, and you tell the story, you ask a lot of questions, you buy some lunches, some breakfasts, and then you sort of navigate the whole customer development process.
So can you talk about that first person who said yes, the first customer that said, okay, I'll give this a shot?
Sure, he should get the credit. Jason Curtin and Rob McKinney from J.M. Wilkerson. It's a local construction company. I mean, we've talked to a bunch of other ones, and I don't want them to think that we forgot about him, but you asked for the first one who actually said yes. He's a safety director, risk manager, so he's been taking a lot of photos and had this.
So he was feeling the pain personally.
Exactly. And he wanted to find a solution and was looking at the technology, and we sort of came at the right time. He saw that we were...
Was that just pure luck that you just happened to find him, or that was through your network?
So it was a lot of networking. So I guess partly it's luck that through your networking, you end up at the right person.
But he had the need right at the time that you had the solution.
Yes.
So now you share with him what it could be. Did you go out in the field with him the first time? How did you...
I've been a few times, and actually we continue to do that, so it never really stops.
Right, because you want to learn too, right?
The whole time, and I'm saying even now that we have a solution that people are willing to pay for, we still go out and see how can we make it even better.
Right.
How can we make it simpler for the guys in the field and more powerful for the business on the back end?
So now when you told him the idea and he thought, wow, this is going to save me a lot of hassle and time, and then you actually demonstrated it. Was this like a no-brainer at that point for him?
So I have to call out not necessarily, because that was in the early stages of literally having the vision.
And prototype?
Exactly.
Or pre-prototype?
Well, a prototype. Let's say prototype. He actually called out a few key pieces that then got us sort of to the next level, which was the ability to manage the relationship between the office and the field. Mm-hmm. Being a mobile-first business, we basically started by just solving for the mobile piece and the business piece, but that the connection needed to be a little bit more robust to make it a business solution. So he helped us actually figure out what are the minimum viable product features that we needed to have before he would actually pay for it.
And that's a great lesson for other entrepreneurs out there, because in your head, you probably thought you were pretty close, but in the field and use an actual customer, you were missing something that was important to them.
That's right. And I would actually say there's a whole list of things that we think applies. The ability or the listening to feedback to prioritize in which order you're actually delivering something as you're going to the final vision. And I'm talking about zero friction, where there's actually very little clicks, if any. But how do you get there, and in which order are you going to be increasing the value that you're providing to the
prioritizing
market?
Prioritizing from the eyes of the customer, not from your eyes of your developers.
Exactly.
So construction projects make an awful lot of sense to me in retrospect. They may not have had you tried to explain it to me early on, but I would think maybe applications in military intelligence, athletics, there must be just a broad variety of fields where this could have some real application, huh?
Yes, and we've actually expanded the sort of the target audience. So mm-hmm. It started with a construction property management, and then, if you will, selling those properties that would build and that are continually managed. So insurance claims adjusting. So basically all the risk engineering in terms of insurance companies, merchandising, taking a bunch of pictures of the shelf space, engineering, due diligence, medical in terms of taking pictures and the progression of wounds.
Right.
There's a lot.
What about military?
So military.
He's not allowed to tell you. Are you kidding me?
The government is notoriously hard to sell to, so we have them on the radar, but they're not sort of. We feel like we can do quicker and bigger wins in the ones that I've already mentioned, but we definitely have them. That's probably going to be one of those where they'll come to us when it's robust enough and just say, "Okay, we need to use this as well."
But could they put it on a drone, and then take pictures, and then it would all tag it, and everything would take place automatically?
Once we are done developing the full and final solution, probably.
You're not going to quit poking, are you? I'm telling you.
I'm sure he thought of it. No, he's looking at me.
So what's your horizon? 3 years, 5 years, or 5 years from now, you're going to be a mentor, and this is going to be one of those success stories you just
it's something you used to do.
Right. Yeah, from your lips to God's ears. I hope it happens that way and even sooner. But literally, we are building something that we feel can play with a lot of other solutions out there. And the hope is that that's what's going to happen in the next 3 to 5 years. And then, you know, we're still young and we have a lot of other ideas and maybe move on to those and do some other stuff in the future.
Well, what an exciting time for you. Thanks so much for coming by the studio and hanging with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So will you stay with us while we visit with our next guest? But before we go to him, I want to make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you if they'd like to have a conversation with you or someone on your team.
So general information, FOTOIN.com, but feel free to contact me directly at SLY@photoin.com.
Fantastic. And come back and see us. We ought to check in from time to time and just see how things are going.
Just let me know when.
You got it, man. All right. Next up on Startopia this afternoon, we have with us the co-founder and president plus UXD. Lee, what does UXD stand for?
UXDA.
No, it's user experience design, right?
Of course.
We learned that before we went on air, but we're starting to hear more and more about that kind of thing. Please join me and welcome to the broadcast, Mr. Matt Suber with Split.
Yes.
Bring that microphone right in there. Don't let that thing scare you, man. You just conquer it. Lean right on it. There you go. Very nicely.
Karaoke close.
What are we splitting, Matt?
You are splitting because you need to go and you need to leave quickly and split. Or you can split the check with your friends at a restaurant.
Split it anyway or just halves?
You can actually split it anyway. So essentially, the splitting mechanism in a restaurant works a lot like how you would tag a friend to a photo on Facebook. Mm-hmm. You have a bill, you can select to split the bill and you tag friends with it. They accept it. And from there, you can actually split up the total cost of your restaurant bill.
And then the payment, the transaction occurs?
It happens inside the application.
Inside the app.
It's Houdini magic inside the application.
And it's all through Bitcoin?
No.
Splitcoin.
Though we are big fans of Bitcoin and BitPay, actually. But right now we are focused on debit and credit card transactions.
Cash money.
Well, hopefully we'll replace that.
So the restaurants are embracing it, or you've got a few early adopters and you're out trying to talk to them about it?
Yes, actually we do. We're in quite a few locations right now in our pilot program. We're in beta, so we have beta users and beta locations, and the app will be available in the middle of December, so next month. And the embrace has actually been quite positive.
So now, how does Apple Pay factor in? Is that a competitor of yours?
No, Apple Pay is actually a big blessing for us for a couple of reasons. So for the way that our app works, it's essentially another payment method. So we're very excited to utilize that because for a user, it's easy to set up Apple Pay than it would be a credit card within our application. And in addition to it, it's actually kind of paving the way for the customer expectation of what you're supposed to be able to do with a phone in terms of mobile payments.
Right.
So we're very excited about that.
Now, would it work if I have Apple Pay and he has a credit card, or do we all have to have the same payment option when we go out?
Well, first, let me tell you how it works now. How it works now is we order, and then when the bill comes, he goes to the restroom.
Right, so that's
how, that's how it works
it's
now.
It's called Stone Pay. That's what we call it.
Yeah, so great question. So essentially, within the application, the payment type does not matter. As long as you have the application, you can pay for your bill at any time without waiting, or you can split with another split user and pay at any time.
So now, walk me through. All three of us go to the restaurant, and it's time to pay. So what happens?
Sure. So you walk into a restaurant. You are a customer.
Right, us three.
Exactly. Let's say you start with the bill.
Okay, I start with the bill. They hand me the bill because I'm the oldest.
You open the tab from your phone. You just kindly let your server know that you are paying with Split. From there, your dining experience is exactly the same. You would order your starters, your dinner, your meals, and so forth like you would today. The only difference is when you decide to go, you can. There's nothing to wait for. There is no billfold to bring to your table. It is on your phone. So you can pay for it right then and there for yourself, or you can whip out your phone and tag myself and whoever else in your party, and we can split it with you.
And then you can say, look, I only got this, so I only want to pay $10.
Exactly. So for... Yes. Yeah, so what we call is that a change method. And with the change method.
Right, because some people, going out with a bunch of people is crazy sometimes. Sometimes you just, everybody splits it evenly, right?
Family's
and then sometimes
worse.
It's like, look, I didn't order Coke. Why? Whoa.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And actually, in our end user discovery, what we found is even split is not enough. So we actually started off, the application defaults to even split, and then we discovered that we need to involve something that we call a change method, which allows the customer to just enter a dollar amount or actually go through that bill and start selecting specifically what they had.
So, all right, so what if I'm not there? Can you still send me, he's in a different town. It's a stone. I need you to pick up half of this?
Technically, you can, but that's why you have the option to decline.
I want this thing. I want to be a beta, what do you call it, a beta tester thing. All right, so I want to, these ideas, to me, I'm very enamored with all these kinds of new ideas, but I'm trying to envision day to day, you pull up in the parking lot of XYZ restaurant, and are you like, can I speak to the manager? Can I tell you about this way cool new idea? What day to day, how does socializing this idea work?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it really came into the discovery, which was really interviewing, because we're double-sided, right? So we're B2B, 2C, right? So we depend heavily on the end user, which is the restaurant customers, but our customer is actually the restaurant.
Right.
So what we've learned through our own research and actually independent research is that people actually aren't talking to the managers. In fact, there's studies that show that actually 94% of customers actually avoid any confrontation with management, which is really interesting.
Wow.
And then as far as like new ways to handle problems, you know, waiting to pay a bill, that's not really a new problem. We're just introducing a new way to handle that. You might go to a restaurant during a lunch hour, and that wait staff member might be proactive to put it on your table. But really, you know, payment is a problem once you decide you're ready to go. It's a moving target, and it's hard to assess, especially if you're busy as a wait staff member. So what we've done with our user discovery phase is that we leaned very heavily on wait staff because we discovered that those people will be the people that use our product the most when they're at work and when they're not. So when we were developing our product, we leaned very heavily on the perceptions of wait staff because they have one foot in each realm, both on the end user and also on the restaurant.
So when you started to talk to them and get their input, was there anything that surprised you?
We did not realize initially how synergistic, at least from specifically the wait staff, because, you know, owners and managers, that's a different, what we call a user profile. But from wait staff and customers, they're actually quite synergistic. You waiting for the bill, especially in a big group, is a pain for the wait staff member to split apart.
Right.
If it is a peak hours, whether that's a lunch hour or a weekend, again, you waiting to pay for a bill is a problem for that wait staff member. And then we discovered some other things as well, small things that impact the customer experience is a restaurant you've been to many times and someone saying, hey, have you been here before?
Right.
You know, just knowing that you've been here a few times or that you're a regular, that actually changed how you perceive that business and that restaurant. So once we kind of got in deeper and realized there was a synergy in the form of payment and closeout, we kind of dug deeper to see what else is there that we could do. And we've leveraged that within our application.
So now within the application, when the person, I guess you're logging in, or how are you're identifying yourself as a split
yeah.
User?
So, you know, not unlike, you know, the setup wizards of old, when you first get the application as a customer, you're kind of designating what your dietary restrictions or preferences are.
Right.
For me, I do not eat pork, so I can just actually put that in the application. And also, I have a particular taste for whiskey and Indian food. So when I actually go into a restaurant, they can actually get a snapshot of what my taste profile is. And that's what we call it. And they can react based on that on the fly.
They could ignore the pork special.
Exactly. They don't have to waste my time with the pork special. They know that this customer is not going to go for it.
Right. Yeah. So that would be a use of it.
Exactly.
And so that's a benefit for the restaurant and the wait staff.
Sure. Or they could warn me that something has been, you know, in pork oil or something along those lines.
Yeah. But if you say you don't like pork and he says he loves pork,
I won't eat anything that hasn't been dragged through pork.
Right. So the wait staff can adjust accordingly.
Exactly. On the fly.
Right.
Yep.
That is fantastic, and I really applaud your effort in the way you went about the customer discovery and talking to the wait staff, because that's the boots on the ground. That is really smart. So
was that your idea?
Was it your idea, or did you get a little help?
No, well, we...
Go ahead and say yes. It's all right.
It was... we got a lot of help. So one of my co-founders, Daniel Dorfman, he's kind of the domain expert within the hospitality industry. So after, you know, when you're a startup, it makes sense to go to the owners and managers, because that's your stakeholder. That's who's going to buy, you know, the platform that you're building and or selling, correct? Mm-hmm. And then based on those answers in terms of business requirements, what we had to do in terms of reporting, the way we had to build the platform in a way that it doesn't impede or disrupt the current restaurant workflow
right.
At all or very little without very clear benefits, that we found that there was someone, as I mentioned before, that would use it all the time, and that would be the waitstaff member. So that's how we developed the product. And then restaurant owners and managers is how we made sure we hit all the business requirements that they need for reporting and so on.
What about all the different POS systems and products that are out there? Does it play nicely with all of them, or you have to build it and adjust accordingly?
No, yeah. So that's a great question. So we can actually integrate into some point of sale systems, and also, partly because of our price point and the way that we integrate into the restaurant infrastructure, we actually are a very viable add-on service. And actually, most of our beta locations, we are an add-on.
So now, is that a channel for you to work through the POS systems and they add your service on top of it?
Yeah, that again, great question. So when we're adding on, meaning we're not integrating directly to the point of sale system, what we do is we actually leverage the printing infrastructure. So that's how we make sure that things are popping up in the right place at the right time. And in addition, because of how we work with payments, everything is flat. So it actually doesn't matter if it was a MasterCard or an Amex,
right,
that for reporting purposes, it just comes up as a split transaction.
So what's the next milestone for the company and for you? Like, where are you going to be putting your energy between now and maybe the end of first quarter next year?
Yeah, we are adding locations regularly. We're always having conversations, and we are preparing for the launch of the application, which will be in the middle of December. So it'll be available on the iTunes App Store. Yeah, very excited about that. And we are having many conversations with current investors and so on and so forth. So
I got you a new underwriter for the restaurant show.
So you have to meet restaurant owners, right?
Or oh, yeah, absolutely.
Show, actually.
What about, are you working with any franchises?
So one of our advisors, John Metz Jr., he actually owns a few brands, but the most notable one in the Georgia area is Marlow's Tavern. So we're working to make sure that our product is scalable so we can hit all of those locations. But as far as franchises, our application and platform is actually really geared towards mom and pop and independently owned restaurant groups.
Oh, really?
Yep.
So Marlow's, if you don't know this, Lee, they're very fancy with the way that they wrap up leftovers, but I only know this from looking at guest tables because we never have leftovers. Marlow's rocks. I absolutely love Marlow's. So what do you need most? What can Lee write you a check? Do you need, what do you need? How can we help?
Yeah, our focus and our needs right now are on the locations. We are focused on getting as many locations as we can in a dense area. So we are focused on Atlanta. And then the second is, you know, the capital that allows us to scale beyond that.
So let's get this thing put to bed, and then let's figure out how to split cab rides, right? Split Christmas presents. No.
Right? Because it's the same methodology.
Yeah, splitting bills, splitting fares.
No,
yeah,
like
a lot of value in that,
fraternity,
obviously.
Colleges, right? All those people got split lots of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's very true.
Roommates, you have a whole roommate plan.
Split your rent, yeah.
Rent, electric, cable.
Hook up with the property manager, see there?
Sky's the limit.
Help him out, Lee.
Website? Where should somebody go to?
Our website is payandsplit.com. That is also our Twitter handle, payandsplit. And my email is Matthew, that's Matthew with two T's, at payandsplit.com.
All right. Well, hey, stay with us if you will. We're going to visit with one more guest.
Absolutely.
She's been incredibly patient. She's nodded her head a lot. I don't know if that's just social skills being manifested or she's genuinely getting some value out of the conversation to date, but it is my pleasure to finally introduce to you the CMO with Kids Link, Miss Titania Jordan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. What do you feel like you learned in those last couple of segments?
Well, I'm really excited. I can't wait for the Split app to launch. And any contractors or anyone else who might be using Photo and is a smart person.
We can't wait either.
So KidsLink, you want to share a little bit about what you guys are up to?
Definitely. So KidsLink is an app that allows parents to connect with each other way more intimately than your 900 Facebook friends. the people that you really care about and don't mind inviting over to your house, you know, if it's a mess. We allow you to protect your children's digital legacy. You know, when you're putting photos of your children on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, even if you have very tailored privacy settings, you still don't know what's happening to that data. And with our company, our mission, our foremost mission is to protect your children's digital legacy. And you can actually reach us. Those other networks don't have a customer service number. If you need
some
help.
It's almost like they do that on purpose. They don't want you to reach them.
Right. But with KidsLink, you own your data. It's not our data. It's not our data to sell. So you can share about your family in a way that will protect them.
So it's a social network for your close friends and family?
Yes. It's a private social network for friends and family, as well as an organizational utility for parents, because that third component of, you know, once you become a parent, things get real, and they get real fast. Mm-hmm. And
is there a parent back channel for me to reach out to Sandy and say, hey, are they really spending the night at your house tonight? Is there...
No, yeah. We can add that.
I'm just saying.
So we have a vault, which is basically like a virtual storage cabinet. It's easier to find things more so than Dropbox or Evernote, because it's really tailored to the life of a parent. Health documents, household information, sports activities, financial. So, you know, keep your Dropbox, keep your Evernote, keep your Facebook, keep your Instagram. But when you want something for parents that it's Facebook meets Instagram meets Dropbox and it's private, safe, and secure, you'll use KidsLink.
So now I can put medical things. So if my kid goes to multiple doctors, I can share that content if I permission them in to that aspect of it?
That's correct. So in my vault, I have a lot of different documents about my son Jackson. And because I'm a working mom, I have babysitters and my mother-in-law. I love you. My mother-in-law, she's awesome. helping me out. Let's say she needs something. I open my vault in the app. I hit share. It sends it as a PDF to anyone who might need it. And there it is right there.
And then, so can you talk about how this got started? What was the...
Sure.
How did it begin?
Sure. I'm going to make a really long story short. The founders of KidsLink saw a real need in the market for apps that serve parents' needs. There's so many apps on the market, but there isn't one app that serves the needs of parents that can almost serve as a home base. One place where we can go that's private, safe, and secure. And then where I come into it as a mom that grew up in the age of motherhood in conjunction with social media. You know, my mother, my grandmother didn't have all these tools at their disposal.
Right.
Whereas I do, and they're wonderful and at times allow me to feel like James Bond with a smartphone in the palm of my hand. But at the same time, I have to be very careful so that when my son grows up, you know, what have I put out there about him and my family that might put us at risk?
Mm-hmm. So now, where are you going to get this kind of adoption? How do you get the word out?
Well, good news is anybody that hears about it loves it. So we're not really experiencing obstacles to adoption. You know, the one thing I'll have to say is every social network that is out there now has all these great features that took them many, many years to get to that point. We've got to come to market with all those features and more. We've got to wow users and avoid friction and just make it as easy as possible. We don't want moms and dads and caregivers to feel like this is more work on their plate, right? We don't need any more of that. So we want to empower parents and make their lives easy and give them a sense of security when it comes to managing their family mobily.
Now, is this replacing any of the social networks, or they're using this as an add-on to their existing social media behavior?
I would say it's an add-on because, for example, in our app, you have four options. I can take a picture of Jackson and share it with just my family on KidsLink. I can take a picture of Jackson and share it with my friends and family on KidsLink. And then I can take a picture of Jackson, share it with Facebook. Take a picture of Jackson, share it with Instagram. So you choose how public or private you want your post to be. And Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, YouTube, I'm going to be on those regardless. And they're wonderful tools for connecting and creativity. But when it comes to my family, that's where I'm going to go for, you know, use KidsLink for that.
And then so this puts all of the photos in a safe place?
It does, yes. We have a very secure system. And on the horizon for first quarter 2015, we hope to partner with Snapfish, Shutterfly, Tiny Prints, so that you can take one more thing off parents' plate of the auto scrapbooking and baby book guilt and have these photos in a nice chronological order and printed and sent to your home.
So have you ironed out a revenue model at this point?
Yes. So the app is free. Mm-hmm. And because we're not selling your data or information or, you know, allowing ad tracking cookies like those other awesome networks, we partner with healthcare channels. So Piedmont Hospital is our local healthcare partner, and we go to other markets. We just closed a great deal with a pediatric practice in Charleston, so we're scaling that way. And it's great because, again, our model to protect and empower families fits right in with healthcare that allow them to let you know about flu season or West Nile virus breakout in a certain area. We allow them to send you alerts that are very important and tailored to your family's needs.
And if you need somebody that can do GPS and other kind of tagging, I know somebody that might be able to help you.
Awesome.
So what's next for you guys? What are you excited about in the upcoming year?
I'm excited to go to work every day. It doesn't feel like work. You know, we need more hours in the day and more people. Adoption, scaling, more healthcare partners, more features. Every 6 weeks, we roll out new features, and it's kind of hard to decide which one's going to make the cut. Oh, we got to push that one out, you know, because there's so much we want to do. Video integration, and then the photo book integration as well.
So now, if somebody wants to learn more, do you just go to your website?
Yes. Go to mykidslink.com. Right now we're invite only, so request an invite. Right now we're waiting at about 1 to 3 days, but I know some people I can pull some strings and hopefully get that expedited to you. Our Twitter handle is kidslinkapp. And then if you want to reach me, I'll spell my name because it's not super easy. Mm-hmm. It's titania.jordan@kidslinkapp.com.
Now, before we go, I'd like to just kind of open this up to the whole group. Can you share your thoughts on the Atlanta mobility scene, your experience? You want to start with you, Titania?
Sure. I think it's an honor to be in the Atlanta market because we're not San Francisco, we're not Silicon Valley, we're not New York, but there's a whole lot of smart tech-savvy people here. I am partial to University of Georgia, but Georgia Tech mm-hmm. is great, mm-hmm. and they're right down the street. So let's pull from our talented local scene right here. And our offices are at the Atlanta Tech Village, which, oh my gosh, if you go there, it's a fantastic hub.
Are you finding, Matthew, are you finding the Atlanta mobility scene a good place for talent and creativity and support?
Yeah, I'm finding very interesting. So won't get too far into my background, mm-hmm. but when I came out of school, I came right when people started to care about mobile. So my background is completely mobile. So I've had blinders on. It's kind of all that I see to some extent. So the talent's been really great. We were very fortunate in how quickly we could build a co-founding team that is still together today after 16 months from ideation to now.
Wow.
It's been overwhelmingly positive. And it's great, especially in Atlanta. What we're starting to see is a lot more B2C and consumer-facing applications, which Atlanta isn't necessarily known for to date. But you know, with the prevalence and proliferation in the market of like things like Scout Mom and so on and so forth, we're seeing really cool things start to happen. So it's a very exciting time.
Sly, what about you?
To add, because I think the previous two comments were right on the spot, is I like that. The scene supports itself. So basically, just like three of us here today, is that there are a lot of mobile startups, if you will, or mobile-first startups, and the ability to talk and collaborate and not just sort of everybody's taking their own track. So I already signed up me and my wife for KidsLink just during the conversation.
Thank you.
See that? That's great.
Getting users.
Good stuff.
So now you've been in the mobile scene and you're seeing it grow. Is there anything that you would like Atlanta to have more of? Is there anything as a community we can be doing more to support the mobile people out there?
What are you fishing for? More radio?
I'm saying, do you need more talent? Is there more? Do you want to see more support from like larger companies, kind of supporting the smaller startups?
So here, I'll jump on setup because I do think that that you can always get more support in many different ways. And maybe we're just sort of, where do you pick to mention the first one? I do think there's bigger companies here that are already helping, and then the ones that can help even more. So not in no particular order on those two comments, but for example, just to mention, AirWatch is the most recent one that sort of did the big exit. So right. There's obviously more interest being directed towards the Southeast, and people are recognizing that. I would say one way to sort of speak about it is see the vision. So not just play it by the numbers. So if you will, that would be my comment. It's sort of in the valley, there's literally a whole group of people that will bet on the vision and sort of see it before it happens, right, rather than wait for it to happen and then just sort of get on the bandwagon.
So you think there's less people here in town that have the money to support some of these things? They're more.
I don't like negative signs in front, so I would just say they can be more.
There can be more. There you go. Matthew?
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know, there are some steps in that direction. This show is an example of one. Stackyards, which will be opening in Pond City Market, is predominantly focused on consumer facing applications, right, and products. And then obviously, if you haven't grasped that yet, I'm very much a consumer facing guy. So having support around that, which is not traditionally Atlanta, I think that's something I'd like to see, and I'm already starting to kind of see that kind of change of heart and that kind of focus.
Now, are there any networking groups you guys are members of that are important to you in your business?
The Atlanta Interactive Marketing Association is a great group that I like.
And Tech Village.
And the Atlanta Tech Village. Right. It's huge.
Sly?
So we've sort of played with a lot of vertical specifics, ABC, AGC, AREP. So there's a lot of industry, if you will, or business groups that can be leveraged to promote, learn, get networking opportunities.
Now, Matt, restaurant associations, things like that?
Yeah, so the NRA, the National Restaurant Association, the other NRA.
Look, this is judgment-free zone
that's
here.
That's one of
relax.
Them. You better split your check with me. AMA, AIGA, TIE, Atlanta TAG as well. And our network is Founder Institute, though we came out of the New York chapter. There is Atlanta just had their inaugural chapter a few months ago.
Oh, really?
So,
can you talk about that? I'm not familiar with Founders Institute.
Yeah. So if I am not mistaken, Founder Institute is actually the largest startup accelerator. So they are in everywhere from Atlanta to New York to San Francisco to Brussels. They're
but they're new
the
to Atlanta?
Yes. They just opened a chapter, I want to say 6 months ago or so.
So
they're actually in Croatia as well. They started last fall. Yeah.
Now, maybe you can connect us. I'd love to do a segment on them.
Yeah, I can absolutely reach out to the CEO, Adeo, and see if we can
make
that happen. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all for being part of the show today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Startopia Radio.